everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable number 180. Today we're going to be talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Season 4, Episode 13, The Iron Team, and Angel, Season 1, Episode 13, She. As usual, if you would like to get in contact with us, please email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable. You can find us on this post on hypeable.com or hit us up at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. My name is Karen, and today I'm joined by Mitch, Caitlin, and Brittany. Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
And we're going to kick it off with some fun facts. You guys can get a little used to our voices. Mitch, why don't you go first?
My fun fact is that I've already decorated for Halloween, and I couldn't be any happier. Go to the dollar store, guys. They have some really great decorations, and obviously it's super cheap, so I loved it. I went on, like, a shopping spree and got, like, little caution tape that says haunted, and I hung it up in all sorts of precarious places in my house. Almost broke my neck doing it, standing on my counter, but it was worth it, because that really would have been haunted, so...
Wow. I really love Halloween, so that actually makes me really happy.
Mm-hmm.
And Caitlin, what's your fun fact?
So last week I said I was going to look for a puppy, and this week, if you've been following my Twitter, you'll see I brought one home last week.
His name is so cute.
His name is Gage, and he is currently mad at me because he is terrified to go outside, and so I have to carry him outside to go to the bathroom, and he's currently so mad at me he won't leave his crate, so we're on a bit of a standoff, but he comes from a really abusive situation, so he's got some issues, but he's a sweetheart, and he's just very skittish, so we're working on it. I'm fostering him right now to see if we'll be a good permanent fit.
Oh, and he's been perking up over the last week, though, right? I think I remember you saying that.
He was doing better, and then we had a big fight about going outside, and he's been mad at me since, because last night he tried to poop on my carpet because he would not go outside.
Yes. Well, that's the great thing about dogs is they love pretty unconditionally, so... I'm sure as you work with him, he'll get a lot better.
He's currently in his crate, turned completely away from me.
Yeah.
So. He's not happy with me.
My cat used to do that a lot. She would just give me the butt treatment. And Brittany, what's your fun fact?
My fun fact is that I don't like Halloween, but I do love the fact that it is 63 degrees, it is raining, and I have a hot beverage and a sweater on, and I could not be happier. I'm so excited for fall.
I hate
Me
you.
Too.
It is the season.
How's
of the
it down world? There right now, Caitlin?
Like 90 degrees, like it's been for the last 3 months.
And it was 88 here yesterday, and all of a sudden I woke up this morning and it was like fall punched me in the face, and I feel so happy.
Thank you, fall. Thank you for Thank punching you, fall. Me in the face. That's pretty great. My fun fact is a sad fact, because some of the members of the cast of West Wing are in Ohio right now, and they're supposed to be in Toledo tonight, and Kristen and I can't go because she's at work, and I just want to cry.
Well, Karen, go alone and make a friend.
I can't. I don't have a car.
Take an Uber. I don't know.
I would hitchhike for Allison Janney.
Yeah, that's a big deal. Like, find a way. Is it far away from where you live?
I have no idea. I don't even know where I live, guys. I've only been here since April. I don't need to know the geography yet, right?
You crack me up. Yeah, you always there seems to be a thing that you're navigationally challenged. That's probably why I named my GPS after you, because she's also navigationally challenged.
For the record, you named her before me.
Yes, but it was rather fitting, wasn't it?
It was, except when you yelled at it, and then I got really confused because I thought you were yelling at me.
I was like, come on, Karen, tell me when I'm taking my left.
That's a fun fact. The first time Mitch and I hung out, he drove me, like, how long was that?
From Green to Pennsylvania's Philadelphia, so I feel like that was probably, like, 3 hours down.
Yeah, maybe more. Yeah. So we got to know each other pretty quickly.
Yeah, that was a good time.
All right, let's jump right into Buffy this week. We are talking about episode 413, The Iron Team. And our synopsis reads, in this episode, Buffy works for the Initiative for like a hot second, but is soon burned by their evil motives. While Walsh is creating a Dr. Frankenstein's monster from demon body parts, Buffy utilizes her pillow talk to learn about the ominous room 314. Walsh is creepy and watched them bang, meaning she also overheard this conversation. With Walsh setting Buffy on a suicide mission to rid the Initiative of the Inquisitive Slayer, the professor believes she killed Buffy when the telecom go out. After conveying this to Riley, Buffy comes back on camera swearing revenge on the Initiative. Walsh goes to unleash her Frankenstein beast, but is skewered in the process. So, first discussion point I think we have to talk about is the Initiative. We kind of get a better look at how they function now that Buffy has worked her way to the inside. And before, you could see, you know, they're capturing these monsters and stuff and experimenting on them. But now you can kind of see, like, how far the Initiative goes. Or maybe just how far Walsh and some of her associates are willing to go. So I want to get, newbies, your take on if you think the Initiative is good, evil, or maybe just indifferent. Mitch, you want to kick us off?
See, I wrote in the beginning of the synopsis that they had evil motives, which they do, but I don't think they do everything evilly. I think that they're a greater good kind of evil, kind of like a Dumbledore, if you ask me. Like, they're going at something good, but they're not doing it the right way, if you ask me. Because, once again, that's really up to interpretation here. I feel like Walsh is kind of icky, but for instance, the men that are working for her seem to be great. Like, Riley and his sassy gay friend, and even like the scientist is kind of icky, I guess. He gives us an evil vibe, but I feel like the peons are great here. They're good. They're trying to just do their job, and kind of like Riley presents that he's just, you know, taking orders because he's a soldier and that's all he knows how to do. When I don't think that makes them evil, I just think that makes them even a victim of circumstance.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, they are the government. This is a military operation. So that's also something to keep in mind. Brittany, what do you think?
I think Walsh is purely evil. I'm sure they all went into this with good intentions. The military pitching it as, you know, research and saving the world and understanding different things that are threats to people. But like most operations where you're trying to isolate groups of people, they probably go horribly wrong. And so I think that the newest recruits like Riley and all the college age kids are mostly good, probably a little indifferent because they're just doing their job and following orders at this point, especially what is Riley's friend's name? I know Mitch calls him his gay friend, but I don't know what his real name is.
Forrest.
Yeah. I think he falls more on the indifferent side, and Riley is good, at least in my mind. But Walsh definitely falls in evil category. She's sort of taking all of her resources and pushing it a bit too far at this point, especially as we saw her building that monster Adam with like her, where she only has access to that room. And then there are those scientists who are falling under her guidance. So yeah, I think there's a mixture in there.
And Caitlin, now that, you know, Walsh's everything is just out in the open, how do you feel about her overall? Do you absolutely hate her, or do you think she's misguided?
Well, I mean, I don't think everything's out in the open. We don't know what her purpose was in creating Adam. Like, what was the point? Is she doing it to, like, take over the world, or is she doing it to, like, have a super soldier to go fight demons or something? Like, if we know that, I feel like we have a better read on her, but we don't know that yet.
True. Newbies, you got any theories?
Well, she's definitely dead, so I don't think we're going to get anything more from her. But I do think that there was something else going on with the creation of Adam, the Frankenstein's monster. I think that really did start as a good thing, but she became power hungry in the process. And also, there's a god complex thing going on here for the fact that she's creating life that usually, in terms of anything like pop culture, turns out to be you're evil in the end because you can't be God, and how dare you try. And now that we have like these powers that the powers that be, right, on Angel, I feel like they can start getting involved here, and it'd be great if they did on Buffy. It'd be a great effective tie-in between the two shows, and they could come in and maybe even take out Adam because he's too strong and he wasn't one of their creations, he was one of man's, and that could be a good conflict also between maybe like Angel wants to keep it around because I don't know. Like you could really work in a lot from this Adam plot now, especially that it was a man-made thing. I think that could go pretty far.
Brittany, do you have any other theories?
No, I think Mitch pretty much hit the nail on the head with his analysis of the situation.
Yeah, Walsh to me, like, obviously you're right, you know, Caitlin, we don't know all of her motives, but I think you get where she was kind of distant before, you get a really good look at her in this episode. And like we brought up before, like she has cameras in all of their dorm rooms, which is so creepy and intrusive.
Oh my God.
Oh, it was horrible. And she's just, you know, she's not above manipulating the people around her. And you can tell when Riley stalks off, I think she really does care about them, but I think she cares about other things equally, if not more, than the people beneath her. And so it's frustrating because I don't hate her like I've hated a lot of other characters on this show, but at the same time, you can't excuse the things that she's done. And especially when you see how far she's willing to go. Like, the Slayer is a huge asset for them. Huge. They should really be taking pointers from her. But as soon as Buffy just gets a little bit in the way, she writes her off and she tries to kill her. And I think, you know, there's no excuse for that.
Well, she's clearly trying to, like, I don't know, she's not very trustworthy. Or not trustworthy, trusting, like, you know, if she felt like she had good motives for what she was doing, she could have maybe told Buffy about it and been like, here's what I'm doing and see how this is going to be great. So maybe you should help me out or something. So the fact that she's so sneaky about it is definitely sketchy in her favor. But I do feel like the moment that Riley walks away and she yells his first name, like, it does seem like something kind of breaks in her. Like, there's mm-hmm. definitely that level of personal connection. She cares about Riley very much.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Switching gears a little bit, let's talk about Spike. Spike gets tagged in this episode, and he goes to Giles and the others for help. And it's just antics ensue, as they usually do when Spike's involved.
As usual, yeah.
Did you guys think that this might have been it for Spike, or, you know, that he was going to get captured again? And what do you guys think of, you know, this weird relationship of give and take between Spike and Giles in particular, but also kind of like everybody else?
I love that Spike kind of has to, like, you know, grovel his way back and tries to be his own man. And, you know, now he's almost like Wesley in a way. He's like a rogue demon hunter because he can't hurt anyone else. And when Giles went to go see him at the start of the episode, I just felt like, and he like wasn't leaving right away. You just feel this like isolation between the two of them where Spike's trying to act all cool and all like, you know, I'm going to stay here and do my own thing and I don't need you guys and don't call me when you're in trouble. And then you have Giles, who is sort of looking for problems to fix in a way, because I think he's starting to feel a little bit isolated from the group, especially after last episode where Buffy didn't tell him about Riley and, you know, she kind of has her own personal life stuff going on and he still has a few literal demons from his past coming back to bother him. But for the most part, he's sort of cast aside from the inner circle that they used to have. And so Spike is also feeling that. And I think the way that they're drawn together is really interesting and for the most part hilarious. So as long as they keep that push and pull, it'll keep my attention.
yeah. so good. Everything about it is so good. He makes him pay him back.
Yes. I really like how Mitch posed this question in the doc, which is, will Spike realize that he has to stick around as a good guy soon? Not will Spike stick around. It's will Spike realize he's going to stick around, because it's so obvious to us that he's like kind of already making his way in. But, you know, he's got to keep his reputation intact.
Fair enough. Yeah. No, I agree. I think it's just pretty obvious. He's there for good. And not just forever for good, but for good in terms of goodness.
But I'm still wanting to go to Angel. He has to go to Angel. That image on Netflix is lying to me up until this point.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's kind of funny because those images on Netflix fool you, because like you're like, okay, so what's going on from this image? And you think you figure it all out, but then that's not what's happening in the current plot that you're at on either show. So you're like, ooh, how are they going to get to that? So in a certain... like aspect, I feel like it's more fun to have those, even if I do hate them, because they do like give you something to look forward to. Like, how are these characters going to go to this extreme?
Yeah.
Yeah, good point. And I really want to talk about Willow a little bit too. She didn't have like a huge part in this episode, but I think it's really interesting right now that she and Buffy are kind of on a rocky road a little bit with their relationship. I mean, Buffy's spending a lot of time with Riley, and Willow's feeling a little bit alone, but at the same time, she's got Tara, who she hasn't introduced to her other friends, and Xander has Anya, and it's getting a little, I don't know, strained, and that really makes me very anxious because I love Willow and Buffy's relationship and I love how they help each other. And whenever things are like this, it just stresses me out.
Yeah, and Buffy doesn't even seem aware that their relationship is strained. That's what's really disturbing to me, is that Willow is very obviously uncomfortable and Buffy's just so in this honeymoon phase of her relationship with Riley that she doesn't even see the strain, and that's really sad.
I agree with that to an extent. I think that Buffy has gotten better in terms of picking up on body language and that sort of thing, because she does ask Willow, you know, is this okay? I'm sorry, I couldn't really get out of it. Are you okay? Like that sort of thing. Willow tells her, yeah, I'm fine. But at the same time, it's so obvious that she's not fine. So I appreciate that Buffy kind of takes that first step, but I just wish she would keep going with it and realize that like things really aren't okay and they need to figure that out.
I mean, yeah. Those steps feel to me just like the kind of what you'd say, like, oh, I hope this is okay kind of thing, like assuming that it is without really meaning, like, I thought about it and thought you wouldn't mind, like, I just assumed, like, it just felt very superficial to me.
Mm. Yeah, almost like she's like leading Willow to give her the answer that she wants. So it's sort of like, oh, this is okay, right? And Willow is Willow. She'll always say, yes, it's fine. Everything's cool. And I know for the past couple of times I've been on, I've been having a hard time like nailing down anything that would make Buffy Buffy. And this makes Buffy Buffy, is there's a guy in my life and he's shiny and pretty and everything else kind of gets pushed to the wayside, which is frustrating because it's happened again and again and again, and it's happening again.
Yeah, it's kind of like she doesn't see what really makes her strong, which is her friends, not her love interest. Mm-hmm. And she focuses on the love interest and kind of puts aside the things that really are what make her a good slayer.
I mean, he is really shiny and pretty, so I can't blame her, because I've been there too, and it's not a good thing to do. But yeah, sometimes you just let your friends fall to the wayside a bit because you're so interested in who you're dating. And it's sad, but it's, I think, a pretty realistic point for us to bring up and for Buffy to present, because that's a very common thing that happens very often for 20-somethings in their first big relationships.
Mitch, do you think that she wasn't that sincere when she was asking Willow, is this okay, and all of that?
So that's a different thing, because I think I would be a little bit less, like, backwardsly catty about that, because I would be more straightforward and I would be like, okay, so I'm sorry for not doing this and I'm blowing you off. Like, I'd probably more of admit it. I think she's beating around the bush in a way that I don't like. She is to the point where I think she should decide what she wants and not just try and get the best of both worlds. Like, do you still want to have a best friend all the time to hang out with, or do you want to be with your boyfriend? You probably can't have both in the way that you want it, Buffy, so we make up your mind here.
Okay. A little bit of an ultimatum. We get to kind of the high point of the episode, which is when Buffy just absolutely slays, pun intended. And this part always blows my mind because Walsh has seen what Buffy can do, and yet she still underestimates her. Did they really think it was going to be this easy?
If so, they're super naive because, God, they've seen her, like, take down an army of their men. And they're like, oh, okay, so these two, like, fishy demon guys will just take her down with their little axes. That'll be fine. We're just going to give her a faulty gun, and that will be the thing that takes her down. It's like, no, come on. Really? Like, she's even told you how many demons she slayed, apparently. Though, I agree with Selena. I still want to find out that number. Like, you would think by now that they would have learned that there's really no way of letting Buffy, you know, die to one of her demon fellows. She has, like, this Felix Felicis going on that even other Slayers haven't had. It's really rare for them to live past, I think, 17 or something, and she's well past that, maybe because she's not working for, God, what was her name? I forget. The one that Giles was a part of, and then he quit, and so did Wesley.
The Council.
Yes. So now that she's not part of them, it's, I think she has a better chance of living, but it seems like groups still want to use her. Like, the Initiative still tries to come in and get her and kill her for whatever reason. It's like, I think a power thing. Everyone's probably afraid of Buffy's power that she has and that she's able to get out of these situations no matter what.
I think Maggie Walsh is arrogant and she's very focused on the science aspect. So she sees the heart rate thing die, so assumes, and she thinks that a faulty gun. So she's very much in both arrogant and it seems like kind of the military aspect, because a normal human would have died in that situation, but she just has no comprehension really of what a real Slayer is. And Buffy's like, you're gonna find out.
Except she never gets the chance to. So
that's true.
That's interesting. And, you know, I really liked that the whole thing with Riley kind of came to a head too, because we knew for a while that the Initiative is kind of shady, but now Riley knows too, and he's kind of turned against the Initiative. He's seen Walsh play all of her cards and find out that she was lying and manipulating the situation. I'm really curious what you guys think, newbies, what you guys think is going to happen next, because Riley has this, you know, just follow orders attitude, and he blindly trusts his superiors. Now all of that is taken away. What's he going to do next?
Well, he did come in second in our forearm competition, so he has quite a career ahead of him. He has a lot of career prospects. I don't know. I mean, I feel like he's the type of person who needs some sort of constant structure, whereas Buffy, I don't know how long Buffy can maybe provide that if he does, like, let's say, you know, team up with them and maybe take a more academic science approach to what the Scooby Gang is doing. I hate saying that. I'm sorry. It still bothers me to this day.
Why?
For the group. It drives me crazy. I don't like it.
The Scoobies. What's wrong with the Scoobies?
I don't like it. I don't know why. I feel like I'm like talking about really sad cartoons, and I love Scooby-Doo. So it's sort of like, I don't know. Anyway, I would like for him and like maybe Giles to hang out for a bit and get some insight as to what really goes on in the demon world and just hang out with them and get a different perspective on what interactions look like between demons and vampires and slayers and that, all that stuff. Because I mean, he could go back to the military and do something else, but he's sort of, you know, there's been a line drawn, and I don't know if he's willing to go back over anytime soon.
Good point.
But Mitch, he is going to look for structure.
Mitch, do you think that's true?
I'm sorry, I was daydreaming about Star Wars that I was watching last night, and it was bad because I had, like, weirdo relations. Caramel was the point.
That is the question, isn't it? No. Do you also think that Riley is going to be looking for some structure, and do you think he's going to falter now that he's not quite part of the initiative, or what do you think is going
to
happen next?
That's where I got to. Okay, so I really had a thought process there because I was thinking about Finn from Star Wars, you know, becoming like a de facto stormtrooper and how effective that was because he had like information on the initiative. That's where I was coming with Star Wars. I knew there was a Buffy point there. Sometimes the way my brain works, I don't even get it. Yeah, I think he's going to come in handy. Now I think he's going to be a really good asset to the Scoobies, and I'm sorry you don't like calling them Scoobies, Bria, because I love that. I think it's a really cute little fitting thing, but I think he's going to be I think he's going to be important because he's going to, I mean, they're going to want to take him out really quick, but I think that he's going to become the best asset that the Scoobies have at taking down the initiative. Now I wonder if they're going to kill humans here, because that'd be a pretty big deal if they were, because they don't do that, but now they have like a large human enemy coming after them. So it's like, do we just imprison them? Do we like stun gun them all? It's not usually Buffy style. She's usually staked to the heart or rip the head off or something crazy, but she can't exactly do that here.
That's a good point. And lastly, we're gonna talk about Adam, who calls Walsh mommy when he wakes up, and he's got a whole lot going on with his various body parts and all of that jazz. What do you guys think? What do you think that this is the big bad? Do you think that this is just the bad guy for the next episode? Do you think he's going to be easy to take down?
I'm a little concerned, mainly strength-wise, you know, what Adam will be able to do. And what that means for how they can stop him, because he does come from a bunch of different demon parts. So will a stake stop him? Can you just cut off his head, or will he grow five more? Like, there's so much going on. But then again, I'm a little confused as to how he will function based on the fact that all of the demons that we've encountered so far have come from these very complicated different like mythologies, and there's a lot ingrained in what they're able to do based on history, and now he doesn't have that history, I guess, to pull from, unless he's able to pull like each body part is somehow like able to, you know, really come together and pull from all these different powers and things at once. And if that's the case, then I don't know what they're going to do. I think they're going to have to pull in everyone from Angel and figure it out. But yeah, I'm just really interested to see how all these things come together and whether or not he's able to harness all the different types of demon abilities into one person.
And not just that, but like cognitive function. You know, he clearly can speak and think, but what is going on in his brain right now? That's always my big question.
Yeah, and the fact that he did say mommy was a very human trait, like, I don't know how, I mean, we haven't really explored, like, watching a demon family come together and have a child and how that child interacts with parents and, you know, that type of relationship. So to have the word be mommy and not master or like, you know, something else, I was really interesting to see what that mentality does to him, if there's a mentality really there at all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of sensing like some Bates Motel kind of stuff going on.
Okay.
That'd be creepy.
Yeah. Like, what if he starts dressing up as Walsh and tries to teach her classes with those pointy arms? Like, you see, Buffy, and then you have to go into your dreams and just, and everyone's looking at him like, what?
That would be funny. I was going to ask you what your crazy theory about Adam is, but didn't even have to ask. There you go.
Oh, you knew it was going to come out eventually. Yeah, definitely a cross-dressing Adam teaching philosophy class. That's going to happen.
I totally would watch that.
That would be fun.
All right.
It's been off.
We can jump into favorite scenes now. Mine is just kind of a quick moment, but it's when Willow ionizes the air and all of their hair sticks up. What I wouldn't give to see Spike's hair, but I just love, like, Willow looks up and kind of, like, bobs her head and it, like, doesn't really move. It just makes me laugh every time.
Wait, why didn't we see Spike's hair now that I think of it? Was he just ducked down?
Yeah, he was laying on the table.
I'm sure he had a, like, you know, hey, Giles, go grab your gel and you just slick it back again.
Would it have moved, though? That's my real question.
Yeah, he probably uses, like, hair cement. Is that a thing? I feel like that's a thing.
Caitlin, what was your favorite scene?
So mine is the part where Buffy shows up on the camera when Walsh is telling Riley that she's dead and is basically like, screw you for trying to kill me. I'm going to get revenge. And it's pretty great because she's a badass.
Oh, that moment is just, especially because you're looking at Riley's face and his eyes shift over to the camera behind her. And you see her on the camera while Walsh is like, she's dead. I'm so sorry. I know you cared a lot about her. And then you're just like, oh, yeah, the moment's coming. It's going to be so satisfying. And it is. I love that part, too. Mitch, your favorite scene?
Mine is when Spike comes back to Giles for help to remove the tracker, and Giles makes him pay money to do it. And I think that's wonderful. You go, Giles. You go Glen Coco.
Brittany?
Mine was when Walsh puts Buffy through that, like, training scenario, and she comes out and she's all like, oh, it took them 43 minutes to track you and it took you to like 27 seconds to beat all of them. And Buffy sort of like, was I, like, you know, modest enough or like playing it off enough? And just Walsh being really pissed and just going back into the Humvee.
I like when all the guys are like limping too. They limp away. They're like, good job, Buffy. Ow. And favorite lines, mine comes from Willow when Buffy invites the initiative friends over to the table, and Willow just sort of goes, the more. And I have to tell you, this is like my attitude in life. I don't really like surprises, and I don't like that come with big crowds. Like, I don't mind hanging out with a group of friends, but I like to know who's going to come hang out and be prepared for it. And I just really felt prepared.
I'm with you, Karen. That makes sense.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
no, it's not like an extreme agoraphobia. It's like you want to know like what kind of like personality you're gonna have to put up with that night. Because if someone's really like if someone's just like the catty person of the group, you want to know who to avoid and like, you know, I'm with you.
Yes, that is exactly it. So I really felt for Willow when she was like, oh, crap. Now I have to hang out with these people as well. And she just wanted time with Buffy and Xander and Anya, I guess. But yeah, it was, I understood her very well in that moment. Caitlin, what was your favorite line?
So mine is when Buffy and Willow are having lunch and Buffy sees Riley getting a Twinkie and she goes, a Twinkie? That's his lunch? Oh, he is so going to be punished. And Willow says, everyone's getting spanked but me. Which all goes back to the hilarious line where Anya says, yes, we enjoy spanking. Really.
And Xander, just all the cards go flying.
I get really anxious in TV shows when they like throw cards or something around. I'm like, somebody has to clean up that mess, guys.
Mitch, what was your favorite line?
Well, I already gave the reason of why, but it's mommy when Adam wakes up and does the thing. So, like, did she release him, or did he get out on his own volition? Like, what happened? Did we know?
I don't think
she actually let him out, because I think I said in my recap that she was letting him out. I mean, tomato, tomato, because she's still there to, like, coax him and, like, tell him he's a wonderful little boy.
I thought she undid his whatever was going on there, but
I could be
honestly, I think
minds.
I looked away at that moment.
Oh, yeah. You were too scared because you knew what was going to happen?
No, I think I was playing Mahjong or something.
much more important reason.
Yeah. Well, I think that line is interesting too, because Adam is obviously a reference to Adam and Eve, so he's the first man or first of his kind, and in the creation story, you know, Adam doesn't have a mommy, but in this one he does, and he kills her.
I'd be more satisfied if he ripped her rib out personally.
Ew.
To make his Eve.
Yeah, I guess. Complete the metaphor.
Well, Brittany, what was your favorite line?
Mine was from Spike in the beginning of the episode, where he says to Giles, "And I don't want you crawling back here, knocking on my door, pleading for help the second teen witch's magic goes all wonky or little Xander cuts a new tooth." Because it's basically how the show functions. And we all know that, we don't know, but we've been saying that Willow's magic is going to go wrong. So looking forward to that and Spike being there, even though he doesn't want to be.
But you know he kind of does.
But he kind of does, yeah, exactly.
And they definitely wanted to say Sabrina the Teenage Witch here, but you know that they couldn't because there's probably, like, some bad blood going on. I'm sure, like, Joss has probably stepped in a couple toes by now. I think Sabrina's airing on TV at this point. And I feel like it probably wasn't, like, the best things. I've always had this, like, underlying feeling that those two shows do not get along. I don't know what it is, but I just feel like every once in a while we'll have a line like this where they just don't say Sabrina, and it's like, we're not going to give you that free publicity.
I feel like there's been a line at some point that did say Sabrina about Willow.
Maybe they just don't want to overdo it. I could just be sensing some fake animosity. Maybe it's just that I feel Sabrina stole from Buffy.
I think you have your own sense of animosity, Mitch.
I do. Now, if there's a back, like a black cat best friend, I mean, at least Amy's a rat, not a black cat, because that would be too much.
Always comes back to Amy.
It always will come back to Amy. God, really, she's the crux of the story here, I'm telling you.
Amy comes back and beats Adam.
Perfect. Done.
That's how the season solves itself. Done.
I'm ready for that.
Yep. Spoiler alert. I also like the irony of that line because Spike goes and needs some help from Giles. He does not want to be there, but he needs the help. All right, let's talk about Angel, episode 113, She. In this episode, everything changed when the sexy lady demon attacked. Not sure who the good or bad guys are, and similarly conflicted about the uber-hotness of newcomer Jira, Angel gets messed up in a fight to enslave female Odental demons via their emotional center called Ko. After kicking the Vigoris of Odental into Kingdom Come, Angel warns them to not take their conflict to this dimension ever again. So I really like this episode. I think that a lot of the episodes in both of these shows can get kind of deep sometimes, which I remember talking about way when we first watched Buffy in season one, and people are like, oh, the show's kind of silly. And I'm like, yeah, but just wait, because there are some really poignant moments. And I feel like this episode as a whole is just, it's a lot deeper. Like, you can take it one way, but obviously there are some real life, like, connections, and you can take it a little bit deeper than that. So I always really enjoy watching this one. What about you guys? Did you like this overall?
There were definitely some very, very high points that made the very, very low points seem okay.
Yeah, that's where I'm at.
So, okay. Yeah, I didn't hate it like most of our listeners did. When this episode came up on the Twitter, everyone was like, I don't like She. I stopped watching Angel after She. And I was like, oh boy, this is not going to be good. And it was actually interesting. I mean, I didn't hate it, but I don't know how I would have liked it if I didn't have the dancing.
I think it's just the fact that it's like an isolated episode that's not even Monster of the Week. It's more of just like, let's get into this conflict about characters that we'll likely never see again. Because I don't know this guest star, but I think she's something famous from the fact that she's noted in the Buffy world synopsis. So that must be a thing to say, like, yeah, we're just not going to see her again because she's like too famous. She just kind of came in to sell the episode. Maybe she got, you know, a higher viewership. That was the idea here, as opposed to actually giving us plot. And I think that's kind of stupid. I just don't like that. It had no part, no, like, in the overall arc of Angel, this felt so irrelevant to Wesley Angel and Cordelia. It didn't really advance them. It kind of showed Angel getting a little bit like hot and heavy-ish with what's her name, Jira, because he like made her spine glow. But I don't think that's going to be like a forever romantic thing. I mean, it's just like, why do we even bother giving Angel a new love interest even? That's not going to advance anything. We know it can't go anywhere. So, like, what was the point of this episode?
I disagree that this had no purpose, because I feel like Angel is really working hard to show a different side of demons. Buffy is very much demons bad, people good, except, you know, complicated people. But, like, demons are 98% of the time bad on Buffy. And Angel, I feel like, is working very hard to show that there are, you know, there's a more gray area in demons, that that's not just demons bad, kill demons, protect humans. Like, there are, there's a lot of gray area. And I feel like what we're seeing a lot of, like the episode where Doyle dies, you've got that group of refugees basically that they're helping. Like, we're seeing lots of demons who need help, and we're seeing that Angel is willing to help whoever needs helping. So I feel like the whole purpose here is just to continue showing the gray area of the world that we're in, and it continues to be a little bit more nuanced in that portrayal than Buffy is.
Yeah, that was exactly where I was going to go with it as well. I felt like they spent, and where I got disconnected, which bring like perfectly highlights Caitlin's point, is that there is this gray area for demons, and I felt more disconnected from the episode because it was a lot of background and history of this particular group that we may never see again, I don't know, but because we spent so much time learning about the demons and getting a sense of their history and getting a sense of this struggle that's going on, it's because it's highlighting something deeper than what we're used to seeing, which is demon bad, kill demon, move on to next episode. And so I'm actually, this is the first time I'll be saying this, I'm interested to go back and rewatch this episode a little bit because of the fact that I took a step like away from, you know, really paying attention to what was going on, because I have it in my head that demon bad, we should just kill it and move on. But there is this whole other world that Angel is exploring in the area where, oh, well, now when at the top of the episode, we actually have to think for a minute and say, oh, maybe this demon group isn't bad. Why isn't this demon group bad? And what are they going to do to help them?
Yeah, those are really good points. I do think that this episode feels a little isolated, but at the same time, I think that, Caitlin, you made an excellent point, is that it kind of gives you this overall sense of this world that exists out there that I don't even think Buffy is necessarily aware of. You know, it is very black and white in her world, and she's obviously come to realize that not all demons are bad. I mean, Angel, oh, hello, but there's this underbelly that I think Angel is just really deep in, and I like seeing these stories. I like seeing the demons as the heroes as much as the humans. I think that's a really cool thing to do with the show, and it does set it apart from Buffy, which when you're doing a spinoff, you know, you want it to have its own voice and purpose, and I think that Angel is really starting to find it, its voice, because of this aspect. So I mean, I do like this episode a lot just because it does give you a lot of background for the species that you may or may not see again. I mean, obviously, I think it's, they're not going to be a huge part of the show. So you get a lot of information and a lot of cultural stuff that you might not use again. But at the same time, it just fleshes that out. And I like that it establishes that there are portals, that there are different dimensions, and that the demons are coming through them, for better or for worse. And it gives us a lot of moments, too. Like, I'm sure Brittany will talk about extensively with the dancing. But it gives us a lot of moments to really latch onto that are character-driven, which is cool.
Well, not that I can look it up, but I'm curious, too, to see if you superfans knew of this guest star. I'm looking up her name right now. Bai Ling, it looks like. and I'm not sure. I'm even scared to look up her IMDb in case she turns out to be like a major Angel character later on and has like 50 episodes listed on her top, you know, hits. Do you guys know of her before we talk about anything Angel related? You know, I'm not saying anything about her character in the future.
I mean, I don't really know her. Okay. Going on her IMDb, she was in The Crow and Anna and the King, but...
See, and Star Wars Episode 3 in a deleted scene.
Oh, okay. So...
Nice.
So that's where I'm just wondering now.
She has a huge filmography, but it's not a lot of things that I recognize.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, I just don't know if she's going to come back. That's where I'm stuck, Britt. Do you think she's going to? Is that why this episode mattered?
No, I think it matters for the reasons that we have highlighted, that we need to pay attention to each group of demons independently and not as a, like, you know, a subsection of supernatural beings. We need to take each group as they come.
It's like a theme as opposed to like a building.
Yeah, I think we just need to, you know, there is a history to each culture and some are at war and others need help at different times. I don't think it's necessarily like this is going to be the major arc of Angel and we're going to be going on this mission to this particular demon world and saving them all. I think it was just, impersonally, I think it was a one-off episode, but it really set the tone for what Angel wants to do with its show, which is show a different side of supernatural beings, just like we were shown a different side of Angel, and that's what Angel is going to be doing. People assume they need to kill all vampires and he is the outlier, and so now he's helping the outliers of the demon world or whatever else we come across.
And I suppose that Angel starts to feel like Veronica Mars in a good way, because Veronica Mars did a good job of taking those isolated stories and bringing them back, sometimes even like two seasons later, from first to third season. I'd be happy if we saw some, not even just necessarily Chihir or just, you know, the Odin Tall people come back, and maybe Angel has to be involved now because he was involved in season one. That would be kind of cool. I'd be happy if it didn't have to be her, but just that world that we've built mattered, or maybe even the fact that portals exist matter. Like, let's just say Angel has to start jumping through portals to go to different dimensions to go mess around with things and, I don't know, collect the Dragon Balls or something, whatever you want to do. That could be kind of fun.
Yeah, I would say I think Angel is doing an interesting thing because it's introducing pieces of lore that we're not seeing on Buffy. Like, they introduced this idea of the powers that be and the oracles. So now we have the sense that there is some kind of higher power looking over things. And now we're introduced to the idea that there are portals. So there are other dimensions. Are other creatures from other dimensions going to come in? Is our group going to go through a portal? Like, that's really another interesting piece of lore that seems like it's come up that we haven't really seen before.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, we kind of already touched on this a little bit with, you know, demons can be good as well as bad, but I also like Angel for the fact that it often throws you for a loop. It kind of confuses you a little bit at the beginning because you think one person is good and the other is bad, and then they often flip-flop that. And I think that it throws you off, but it also makes you realize, like, don't judge a book by its cover. And that's also very important for Angel the show and Angel the character. So the fact that we thought the guys were the good guys in the beginning and that they were hunting whatever this, you know, burning monster was, is very interesting, because by the end you realize that these guys are very bad and the women are just trying to get their lives back. So that's always nice to see.
It reminds me of how we represented Walsh in Buffy, because she has a lot of decent qualities about her. She is all for education, it seems, and she's, I don't know, kind of supportive of Buffy and Riley, and that's cool. But then she's evil in the background. Here, they're like, hey, bud, we're just trying to save some people from getting burnt. And they're kind of like reasonable sounding, because when you're talking to them, it just feels like they're normal people. They couldn't harm a fly. So then when they jump and they become evil to us, I like that twist. I like when Buffy and Angel do that, because they do a really good job of creating these villains, kind of like what Daredevil does, if you ask me, in a way that you like the villain and you almost don't want to see them fail sometimes. Not here. I did want to see them fail. But there are times in Buffy and Angel where I like the demon that is supposedly bad just enough to be like, oh, maybe I could actually be on your side if you weren't evil, because you're kind of fun to have around.
Spike.
Yeah, like total. Like I was totally on Spike's side more than I should have been. Or Angelus. Hello, Brittany. Like, he's like the one that newbies are always rooting for here, because it's fun to see someone so charismatic do evil things.
I'm pretty sure I'm the only newbie rooting for Angelus.
I think you bring up a good point, Mitch, of thinking about the contrast between what's going on in Buffy, which is the whole initiative thing, which is a very black and white view of demons, like probably even more than Buffy herself has. They're just like, demons are animals and we're going to experiment on them. And then you've got Angel, which is really doing this work to have this gray area and show that demons are in a lot of ways like people. You have good ones and bad ones. So I think that's really interesting. Like when you put them together and see how polar opposite some of these views are.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I want to talk about Jira a little bit here, because she is a fascinating character to me. I find her really, she's mesmerizing when she's on screen, not least because she has like purple eyes, which is so cool, but like the tattoo on her face and the ridges and everything, like her whole look is really cool. She's very strong. She's very powerful. But aside from that, this whole idea that in this, the culture that the Odental have, the fact that the women are nothing. I mean, they don't even get a group name. The guys are called the Vigaries, but the women, as far as we could tell, don't have an overall name. And they're just slaves to the men, basically. And they cut off those, the Co? The Co.
Yeah.
On their spines. And it just, you know, they become a shell of who they were. And that the fact that the men are afraid of women who retain them, afraid of their sexual power and their independence, is just,
it's really relevant. Packs,
it's very relevant, and it packs that punch. And that's just a reason why I like this episode, is because it's like, yes, women are powerful, and men can be really afraid of that sometimes.
Basically, like, I feel like these, whatever, the Odental men, they need to listen to Beyonce. They need to get educated on what a woman can do and deal with it.
Well, female genital mutilation is a huge issue across the world even now, so this is very much a statement on the horrors of female genital mutilation.
It's crazy. Like, this episode was disturbing. Whenever they were getting ready to clip someone, I was just like, I can't even watch. This is like, ugh. Like, it's some of the worst content that I've seen on either Angel or Buffy, for the fact that it's so, yeah, I intimate, I suppose, because that we know what it's meant to represent. You're right, Caitlin. And then, like, oof. It was hard to get through those scenes. I really wish that they showed less, but I think that did the effect of showing us, yeah, this is the horror of what's going on, I suppose, in the real world, and try and look away or not, you need to see what this is so you can understand it.
If we're talking about graphic content, can we please mention the exploding eyeballs? Because
That was nothing compared to the Co. I was okay with it. Give me exploding eyeballs all day long. As long as we're not clipping someone's spine genitals, I'm okay.
I mean, you're not wrong, but... I mean,
I've seen Raiders of the Lost Ark as, like, a 10-year-old. That was fine. Whatever.
But the exploding, he was burning, and then they just popped, and God, I felt so bad for Cordelia.
It looked like the Evil Dead deaths for the original movie. Like, really cheesy, just kind of, like, melted plastic or cheese or something. Like, it didn't look like human, so I didn't really care.
It was cheesy, but it was also gross.
Quite literally cheesy.
Yeah, but I think they put those... that sort of graphic in there, and also gave us that awesome credit sequence, because they are really hitting you over the head with these real world issues given with a supernatural twist, but they're kind of reminding you, like, you're watching it in this sort of context, but you do need to take away something from it. So yeah, we also have eyeballs exploding, but we're trying to get across this really awful issue of, you know, female genital mutilation, and you have to take that away, but also, like, oh, people's eyeballs are exploding, and that's not really a thing that's happening. And also, this dancing is really fun, and, you know, you have, they're really doing a great job of balancing so many things, but not losing sight of what the episode is trying to say, which is a really tight rope to walk. And I think I'm really enjoying Angel a lot more because of their ability to walk that line.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we are talking a lot about the importance of being aware of these issues, like, you know, the mutilation that does happen in real life. But I also really like to focus on the fact that, you know, the women who decide to run away from these situations and put power back into their own hands, like, that takes so much strength. And the fact that they can push away everything that they grew up learning and decide for themselves that, no, like, I'm going to take pride in my sexuality, and I'm going to take pride in myself as a woman, and I'm going to do what I need to do in order to, you know, keep myself intact, both physically and emotionally. I mean, I can't even imagine being in a situation like that, but I think that's why I like Jira so much, is that she is so strong, and yet she comes from this place where, you know, she's a princess, and she could end up being in this really horrific situation, but she's so strong, she will not allow herself to do that, and she's helping other people. And I think that's as important to focus on, like, the positive side of it, as well as the very disturbing, very sad, realistic side of it. Okay. Mitch, you liked Sean Gunn in the spa center.
So before Brittany watched the episode, I was like, Brittany, you don't even know what's coming up. And she's like, oh my God, what is it going to be? And now that you've reached it, Britt, we can finally have that moment. Oh my God, sassy gay Kirk. Yes.
I wish Sean Gunn, you know, two roles in one season. This is great.
I kind of wish he would keep coming back like that, just doing, like, crazy little roles like that. Like Kirk does in, like, Gilmore, Gilmore Girls. Like, he keeps doing, that would be so fabulous.
This was the start of that.
I really liked when they punched him and he fell right onto the pillows. It was so perfect. He just looked like he was sleeping.
Sean Gunn is a fabulous creature. I'll give you that much. He's always funny. Like, I wonder how much... Like, I don't really have the timelines down, and once again, I'm afraid to look up anything, but I feel like I should know. Is this taking place in, like, 2002 in the real world? Is that when Angel was filmed right now? Because I think that he was, like, 3 years before Gilmore Girls. No, he was starting Gilmore Girls at this point, so I don't know if we're going to see Sean Gunn some more. We'll see. It'd be fun. Maybe the character
Have a lot going on in the beginning of Gilmore Girls.
Yeah, so you could have some time to come back and play. Like, how many times can they really, like, make him up to change his look enough so that we could be fooled to not know who he is? Because, like, the first time he's playing one of those blue spiky demons that Brittany hates, and I was like, okay, cool. Like, we wouldn't really recognize him coming back a second time. So when he does, that's cool. But I don't.
Yeah, but he changed his voice in this episode because you can really hear it. Like, he's very distinct in kind of his appearance, but also, like, you just know that voice. And then in this episode, it actually took me a second. The reason I knew, when he's really far away in the first shot, and the reason his voice was a little off, but the way I was able to recognize him was actually his body, because he has a very distinct body, like, because he has that stomach, and I'm like, that is definitely Kirk. Like, it clicked right away. But his voice, I had trouble hearing Kirk in there, you know?
Well, I think it was...
I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
I agree, Britt, that his voice sounded different. It sounded like he put on, like, a more effeminate tone. I'm not going to say so far as he was talking, quote, gay, but I think he was... if anything, if he's not playing a gay character, he's just playing one that's just, like, uber fabulous, whatever. I thought that was fun. I think that's a good way for Sean Gunn to, like, you know, feel out his acting chops a bit and just play a really kind of out there character. Kirk is a little bit more bland, I could say. Like, he has crazy moments, but he's not as, like, fun as that. So that was really fun as a big Gilmore Girls fan to see Sean Gunn come in and just do this crazy role. I loved it.
Yeah, he's pretty great. All right, a couple final points here. One is Angel and Jira obviously have a connection, and her spine glows, which obviously means she's found somebody suitable for her, but at the same time, she leaves at the end of the episode. And Caitlin, I really wanted to get your take on this, especially coming from somebody who likes Angel so much.
I mean, duh, he's suitable, because he's Angel, and he's amazing. But I think the whole thing is they're both heroes in their own way. So we've seen that Angel is willing to sacrifice what's going to make him happy to do the right thing. And Jira seems to be the same way, that they're going to sacrifice their own potential personal happiness for fighting the good fight. And that's what we see at the end.
Yeah. Mitch, I know you like shipping things. Do you ship it?
I like shipping anyone who wants to get into Angel's coat, honestly. I agree. He's a very suitable man.
Not his pants, his coat.
His coat, yeah. Because that's what our now deceased Doyle was really into. He was just like, look at that billowing coat, Cordelia. Cordelia was like, oh, yeah, it is kind of billowing today, isn't it? And I was like, of course it is. Hello.
I will have to say that also in this episode, you get not only Angel dramatically putting on his coat and walking away, but you have Wesley and Cordy behind him as this little trifecta group. And it was like, it really spoke to me. It was a good visual.
Yeah.
Them he also going had off to take to a battle. Cold shower.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Wow. That was a lot to do, because I was like, the show really went there. And I think they wanted, they probably just wanted another excuse to show David like sexy, wet and shirtless, just, you know, glistening and coming out looking like a Neutrogena ad. Like, hello, I'm here again, everyone. I don't blame them. I mean, I would show off that man, too, if I was show running that show.
I mean, it worked.
Your audience.
Lastly, Wesley. Wesley is kind of inducted into the group officially in this episode. He gets his job, and he's very excited about it, and he's sucking up to Angel everywhere, just anywhere he can. Brittany, what was your take on this?
Well, first of all, the running plot line of Angel crushing the coffee beans with his vampire strength was hilarious. And I was just like, oh, wow, Angel's starting to look a little bit more appealing if he could crush coffee beans and make me fresh ground coffee every morning. I love Wesley joining the group. I think it's a great addition. I'm glad it's finally trying to be solidified, because right now it's sort of always it's been teetering along like a he could leave at any moment deal. And now that he's trying to like get in the group, and he's sucking up to Angel is so good. And just he was perfect in this episode, especially when he would not stop talking about the mini Rubens. Amazing. It's just amazing. Do you guys have any leftovers? Like, come on. He's so great.
Oh, God. I love him. Oh, he's ridiculous. It's an art form. It is an art form. All right. I want to jump into favorite scenes right now, because we didn't talk about the dancing, but there was a reason why we didn't talk about the dancing, and that's because it's Brittany's favorite scene. So, Brittany, please just regale us with how much you love the dancing so then we can all talk about it.
So I was watching this episode, and I went, it was the first 5 seconds of the episode where they're all dancing, and there's that like Angel dancing thing that happens, and like, you know, a thought process, like it wasn't actually happening. And I went into the doc, and I immediately just wrote all the dancing, because I didn't know that it was, you know, I didn't care what else happened in the episode. That was going to be my favorite part. And then a very astute listener was like, newbies, make sure like you turn off autoplay, because, you know, I just assumed that it meant that there was going to be a spoiler for the next episode immediately in like the picture. So as soon as it said created by Joss Whedon, I turned it off and I was like, all right, on my merry way. And then looking at the She Wiki page, I realized that the entire credit sequence is just a montage of them dancing, and it's the most wonderful thing in the entire world. And so I watched it a few times before we recorded, and it's perfect, and I envy their dance moves. It's great.
I'm sad we missed that. I didn't see that either, because I followed the instructions of the newbies, of the secret fans.
I mean, because I know we complain every week, or not really complain, because I'm sort of indifferent to it, but how the next on image and the synopsis pop up at the end of every episode. And so I just assumed, I'm like, oh, major spoiler. I'm actually going to listen to the Twitter this week, and I'm going to turn it off, and I'm just going to hit stop. And so I did. I stopped on that black screen, and then little did I know, 5 seconds later, there'd be a dance montage.
I don't know what it's going to be. I'm kind of excited.
Oh, it's so great. And the music that they play is so good.
It's the best thing ever.
Is it safety dance? Please tell me it's safety dance.
No, it's just like instrumental music, but it's funny.
I think my favorite part about this is the fact that it is all in Angel's head, because like, that's what Angel really wants to do. That's what Angel is really like. But it takes all of his willpower to just be the cool, mysterious guy. Like, he's constantly fighting this urge to just be this dork that he is, and
he knows how awkward he is.
God,
and
like, yes.
And no one put it as their favorite thing, but when, or their favorite line, but when he's just like chatting with the ghost in Cordelia's apartment, he's just sitting there like, "Hey, sup? Still dead? I get that.
I know the feeling." I love the idea of Angel and Phantom Dennis being buds. Like, that is the best thing ever.
He just, like, passes him a beer.
Oh, my God. And it was like, you know, the bartender behind the bar sliding the glass down the bar. It was
just, long day.
He pulls out the chair and he's like, take a seat.
I mean, a pretty good visual of what that ghost looks like, because he's in the intro. He's like the only boy villain, victim in like the intro's little montage that happens, where it shows like the blonde worm eviscerating sex lady in the beginning, if you know what I'm talking about. Like, that part of the intro shows her, and that shows him like looking up desperately as he's being sealed in the wall by his mother. So if you think about that, you can always like imagine, like, you know, him doing all this stuff for Angel. And I think it's so much cuter having that visual.
And we can't forget about Wesley's dancing either, because that was also glorious. He is just—he is a fish out of water.
His hand-knit sweater that he's going to pass on the compliments for.
Yeah.
If I knew who made him,
and that was not imaginary. He owns it and for it.
Yes, he does.
Did he knit it? And he probably knit it, didn't he?
That was the impression I got. But I think he's just awkward at conversation, too. So maybe he got it.
It was a very fabulous sweater, though. I'll give him that.
Or he stole it from Giles. That is another thing that could have happened. Because he was like, I'll pass it along. And, you know, he probably stole it from Giles.
Now I have this image of Wesley, like, stealing stuff from Giles before he leaves Sunnydale for good. Like, that is the best image ever.
This actually slides right into my favorite scene, which was every time Wesley's enthusiasm makes him fall down. There were a lot of favorite scenes in this episode, and I actually have to say that Caitlin's is my favorite. We'll get to that in a minute. But this one was just great because it was the running gag of the episode. And Wesley, like, you know, when you look at him, he looks all put together. He's always very nicely dressed, and he's got a fairly serious, like, demeanor. Unless you spend more than 5 seconds with him, and then you realize he is just, oh, poor Wesley. And him, like, getting out of the car and falling over, and Cordy's just like, oh, Wesley. And him slipping on the coffee beans. It was just, I loved it. Okay, Caitlin, please take it away.
So mine was when Angel is following Jira into the art museum, and she put the guards on him, so he takes his jacket off, and to avoid being spotted, he pretends to be the docent, like, talking about the paintings on the wall, and he goes into this whole knowledgeable spiel, which is, like, my favorite thing, that he actually has things to say about it. Like, dude doesn't, like, sleep. He reads. Like, Angel's really smart. And so I just love that he just goes on and just jumps in without hesitation and just starts talking about paintings.
Yep. Plus, he's been around forever. Like, he probably was around when they were painted.
Yeah. I will tell you that I've never been more attracted to Angel than in that moment, because I have a degree in art history, so it's very important to me. And when he just started talking about the painting, I was like, literally anything. I will do anything. It was so great. But then they destroyed the painting in the back room, and I got really upset because they always destroy art in action movies and stuff, and the history is just gone. It's very upsetting for me. Anyway, Mitch, what was your favorite scene?
Well, geez, Karen, National Treasure must be like your worst nightmare. My favorite is really not just one scene. It's just basically everything with Sassy Gay Kirk. He is uber fabulous, and he knows it. Even when he knows he's about to get, like, murdered or punched out or something by those guys, he just pretty much is like, yeah, you know what? I'm still going to be really uber fabulous and fun, because, like, that's what you got to do in life. And I'm like, you know what? You do. I'm with that. I can get behind that.
Moving right into favorite lines, mine is from Cordelia when she's talking to Angel about the coffee beans and says, maybe you could crush the beans with your vampire strength, just mush the bag, mush it. And he's sitting there and he just squeezes it a little, like he's contemplating maybe doing it. And then at the end of the episode when he actually does, oh god, it's so good.
And she's like, mushing didn't work, huh?
Yeah. At least he tried. Caitlin, what was your favorite line?
So mine is right before we get that awesome montage of the trio, and Wesley says, perhaps we need a plan, and Angel says, here's the plan. We go in, I start hitting people hard in the face, see where it takes us. Like, that's how Angel makes plans. I like it.
Okay, Buffy. She's channeling Buffy a little there. Mitch?
Mine is Guy, a.k.a. Sassy Gay Kirk, who says to the men coming to retrieve the woman, how about a red clay massage? We have hands that heal, brother. And I'm like, okay.
I still don't know what you're talking about, Mitch.
You need to watch Gilmore Girls. Get on the boat.
Oh, and Brittany.
Mine were two of Angel's lines that I couldn't choose between, and the first one is at the party where Cordelia goes up to him and she's like, this is hell for you, and he's like, in hell you actually know some of the people.
He would know.
Yeah. And then another one was when he was like, I've got two modes with people, bite and avoid, and I'm like, yeah, same, avoid mostly.
I have the same thought.
I was like, attack and avoid, yep, that's pretty much it, that's all I got.
We're going to make all our listeners think we're like highly dysfunctional people. We just really like, you know, avoiding people mostly.
I mean, a lot of us do just have internet friends. So.
Yeah.
Me I know. Or a dog. I may bite or avoid Karen in the next 2 weeks at New York.
I was going to say, that should have been my fun fact. Next week, I get to hang out with Brittany. Well, maybe 2 weeks.
2 weeks, but that's okay.
Yeah.
That's super fun.
Bite each other.
Yeah, we're gonna try to avoid that, but you know, we'll see what happens. All right, so that wraps up our discussion for this episode. As usual, if you'd like to get in contact with us, please make sure that it is spoiler free for the newbies. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable. Leave a message on this post on hypable.com or hit us up on rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And we also really love iTunes reviews. And if you rate us 5 stars, then I will buy you crushed coffee beans for you. What? With her bare hands. That makes no sense.
Who's anonymous grizzly?
I couldn't get in there. I couldn't get in there and get the buy out of there. But a better iTunes incentive is that Karen will crush coffee beans for you with her bare hands.
Yes. Brittany was typing as I was reading, so it got a little messy there. But
I started it, and then she went in and tried to fix it because I had like horrible grammar. I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't do anything.
I know, but I couldn't get rid of the buy quick enough.
It literally says, Karen will buy you crushed coffee beans for you with her bare hands.
That's what happens when two people are editing the doc at the same time.
I'm imagining like that SpongeBob meme where he's the caveman going, "Ooh, Karen will crush coffee beans with you with bare hands."
Okay.
No one knows what that means yet.
I get where you're going with it, but it failed.
Crickets.
As honest as always. Okay, let's jump into listener feedback. Mitch, I'd like you to grab this first one from Twitter.
This comes from my new friend, Edward O'Connor, at @Bromo_Edward, who wrote, @MitchCloud, catching up on Rewatchable right now. Buffy is love, Buffy is life. #fanboy, to which I wrote, I agree, I'm having a lot of fun. And I have been having a lot of fun, especially in season 4. And Edward, welcome to the Rewatchable feedback. I don't remember seeing you in there before. And it seems like you're new to Twitter, so welcome to Brittany's crazy antics. She will drive you wild with her forearm contests. So get ready for that.
Now the pressure is on for the next poll. I got to get some new markers for my pie charts.
You have amazing drawing skills. Like, I still have the oppa you drew me hanging up, and it's really great. Like, I think you need to go somewhere with that.
I was going to say, I'm surprised there was no Boomy in the forearm poll.
Well, I had to keep it to the Buffyverse, although I'm thinking of bringing back a couple of past shows that we've done for new polls against Buffy, because there's some potential there.
There's some great forearms in Korra, I'll just say that much.
But no, we're done with forearms. We're done. We're done.
Who's worse, that ship has sailed? Zuko or Spike?
Okay, very interesting. Caitlin, will you take this next one?
Sure. Shauna Evans at @NickLove128 says, if she was about Angel turning into a woman, what actress would play him? Today, it would be Anna Kendrick. 10 years ago? I got nothing. What do you guys think?
I don't.
Well, Britt, did you see that one that wrote Lauren Graham? I was like, oh my god, yes.
No. I saw it, but no.
No, it makes sense. The way they presented it, they said that she's the equal parts, like, sassy and quirky. I think it's perfect.
Yeah, but Lauren Graham cannot brood, like, and be angry enough to play Angel.
It'd be interesting to see her do it.
No. You need someone who can, like, really hit those moments, and I don't think Lauren Graham has that.
Like Winona Ryder or someone? Like, I don't know.
I don't know.
Kristen Ritter. Let's get some Jessica Jones up
Kristen
in here.
Ritter? She'd be a baby. She'd be, like, 4 years old at this
point. She would be good today, but 10 years ago, I don't.
Yeah, maybe not.
I don't know. 10 years ago, I was just watching one show, and that was probably Gilmore Girls and Will and Grace. So,
yeah, like, same.
I have no idea. Listeners, let us know what you think. That's a good question, though. I like that. Brittany, this one was the tweet you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, so RookBat3 @RookBat3Pern said, very important note to the newbies, make sure you turn off your autoplay on Netflix before you watch this week's Angel. Well, I stopped and I missed a wonderful thing. So if you're giving advice to newbies, be a little bit more specific. Like, turn off your autoplay because you want to watch the credits.
But we solved it in the end.
Yes, appreciate the advice. Going forward, be a little bit more specific.
And our last tweet comes from Emmy Foss at Emmy Classic, who says, I've realized that the episodes in season 4 I truly love is all because of spoiler reasons. Season 4 just fits so well into the Buffy the Vampire Slayer arc. So that's something to chew on.
Yeah, I summarized these this feedback in the show notes, and I wrote that apparently season 4 is Gretchen Wiener's hair. It's just full of secrets that we don't know about.
That's cool. I'm with that.
That's great. Yes, very excited for things going forward. Speaking of which, that brings us to Mitch's musings, where we're going to see what Mitch and Brittany think about upcoming titles. So Buffy 414 is Goodbye Iowa, and Angel 114 is I've Got You Under My Skin. Muse away.
Well, I guess that means Riley's dead. Come on. That's, like, exactly what the episode is, right then and there. And it'd be weird because, like, I know Joss has a tendency to bring in, like, Doyle and even Jesse in the first two episodes of Buffy, a character that's in the main credit sequences, and then kill them off very quickly just to fool you. And I don't like that. I think that's sleazy, honestly. And if they're doing that with Riley, I would miss those forearms the most. I don't know if I voted for him, but I should have. I probably voted for Giles in the forearm contest, but I feel like Riley.
You did. You went on a campaign for Giles.
I did, but now I'm thinking about it, and I'm like, I think I'm going to miss these forearms the most. I really will. because we've seen a lot of the forearms in this past episode, and he was getting honky tonky with Buffy, and that honky tonky is done. Their honeymoon's done because he's dead. So, Britt, is he dead? Or is this just like the goodbye to your old character self or something like that?
No, I don't think he's dead. I think it's more of that they have to get that, like, either they have to change what Riley has known and has been used to, which is the structure and, you know, his good farm boy roots, and introduce him to a new sort of lifestyle, or that is a nickname for him and he decides that he needs to be somewhere else where he can have that structure, and maybe that's going to a different school or transferring or going into a different type of program or finding an ROTC bit somewhere. I don't know, but I don't think they're going to kill him off.
Or maybe we nuke Iowa. Maybe that's a thing. I don't know. So anyways, terrible. Angel 114, I've got you under my skin. Isn't that a song? I feel like it's just like an 80s pop song or something. But it's going to be like, okay, you know what I'm thinking of? Those like scarab demon things from The Mummy.
Oh, yeah. It's a Frank Sinatra song.
Okay. Yeah. So
not an 80s pop song.
No, not
so
an 80s pop song.
Not an 80s pop song.
No, no, very definitely not.
Even Michael Bublé covered it, but it's not a...
I probably know it. I don't know. I'm not going to ask you to sing it, but if you do, I'll be pleasantly surprised.
I don't know it.
So yeah, isn't it going to be those little scarab creatures that get you in The Mummy and like eat you alive from the inside? That creeped me out so much as a kid. That was like a terrifying... I should not have been... Like, watching The Mummy scarred me for life. It was bad. Or wait, maybe it's like a Buffalo Bill thing. Maybe there's going to be like a serial killer who wears other people's skin. That'd be horrible.
Yeah, I also do not like the idea of seeing things crawl under people's skin. No. But I think it's more broad than that. And it's like getting under someone's skin is to really
annoy them.
You know, yeah, really get at what makes them tick. And so maybe this has something to do with them attacking whatever makes Angel tick or Cordelia. I mean, we just had a big Cordelia episode, but I don't know. Maybe Wesley.
Yeah, maybe Wesley's getting like really annoying to everyone because he's trying to suck up to Angel too much and he's trying to hit on Cordelia too much. So they're trying to figure out like how to out him, and they're going to like rat poison his breakfast one day or something, and that'll be that.
You always take it 5 steps too far. Not even 1 step. Always 5 steps. Like nuking Iowa.
Nuking Iowa and rat poisoning your breakfast.
That's 15 steps too far.
Only 15? That's okay, but very good theories. Lots of variety, so that'll be interesting to see what ends up happening. So thank you guys for joining us for this week's discussion. And until next time, I'm Karen.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Mitch.
And I'm Brittany.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. No, obviously what's under Angel's skin is his new cell phone.
I forgot about the cell phone.
I really thought he was going to throw it out of the convertible.